Yeah, the Torah told us in last week's parsha, if a person damages someone else, he has to pay a number of things. One of them is, he has to pay for his lost wages, that's Sheves, he has to pay Nezek Tzar, Boishes, Sheves. And the fifth one is Ripoy, he has to also pay, Rapoy Rapay, he has to pay for his medical bills. The Gemara comments in Mesechta's Bava Kamma, and that passing for Rapoy Rapay, he shall certainly pay for his medical bills. Heal him. We see from here they're derived permission, license for a doctor to heal his patients. Taisa says, why would I have thought that a doctor is prohibited from healing his patients such that I need a pasuk in order to permit it? Taisa explains, based on a theological argument, that presumably the pasuk is referring to healing not only people who are injured, bidei adam, the hands of man, but also doctors licensed to heal patients who became sick with other illnesses that are bidei shamayim. So I might have thought that it's prohibited for the doctor to treat his patients because this person is only ill at the hands of a kodesh baruch hu bidei shamayim, and the doctor here is attempting to contravene the will, the intentions, the gzeira of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, maybe it's prohibited because the doctor is standing in the way of the gzeira of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, Kamash Malan, you know, the pasuk comes to teach us, no, that is incorrect. It is indeed permitted for the doctor to treat the patient. We're not concerned with that theological argument. Why not? Taz made a great point. What is the conclusion of the Gemara in light of Taz's argument? So it seems obvious. I mean, Taz doesn't make the point, but it seems that we can continue the argument of Taz. It must be that it's permitted because when a person heals a patient, he's in fact not contravening the Gzeira of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's not contradicting HaKadosh Baruch Hu because the doctor himself is a shliach, is an emissary of the Ribbono Shel Olam. The doctor is only able to heal the patient because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is aiding the doctor and guiding the doctor in the process. Rabbeinu Bachya, on last week's parasha, notes that whenever a refuah comes at the hands of human beings, the Torah describes it with a dogesh in the pay. V'rapo yirapay. It's a hard pay. However, whenever the Torah describes a refuah that comes bidei shamayim, Kadosh Baruch Hu provides a refuah, it's without a dogesh. Agrifayenu Hashem v'nei rofei. There's no dogesh. Harofei l'shurei, the pasuk can say for Tehillim, or the pasuk earlier, ki ani Hashem roifecha. I am a Kadosh Baruch Hu, your healer, the pasuk in Parshas Beshalach. So whenever Kadosh Baruch Hu heals Klai, so there is no dogesh in the pay, without a dogesh. Whenever human beings heal patients, then there is a dogesh in the pay. So Rabbeinu Bachya explains that it's because whenever a human being heals patients, there's always side effects that are painful, that are difficult. There's a long recovery. There's pain that's involved. And therefore, there's a dogesh because it's hard, it's rough, it's abrasive, difficult. However, because Baruch Hu heals someone, is perfect, it's complete. There are no side effects, there is no fallout, there is no accompanying pain and discomfort. And therefore, it's without a dogesh, it's with soft pay. It's Rafeinu Hashem b'nei Rafei. However, it seems to me that we could add perhaps another explanation to this observation that's made by Rabbeinu Bachya, that perhaps it's because whenever human beings heal the patient, there's a dagesh to remind the doctor that he's like a little dot. It's true, the doctor is doing something. We need doctors. We have a karas hatov to doctors. People should become doctors, fulfilling the mitzvah, you know, by healing people. We need your help. But you're just a dot. You're a cog, really, in a larger machine that's being run by a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And the doctor is the shliach, the emissary of the Ribbono Shel Olam, because the Ribbono Shel Olam is really the one who's providing the refuah. He's the one who's healing the patient. And the doctor is his shliach, he's his representative, he's his delegate in accomplishing this task. But the truth of the matter is the refuah comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam, and it's critical for the doctor to maintain, and for all of us to maintain that perspective. However, the Ramban asks this very same question, the Torah Sa'adam, it gives a very different answer. Rabban asks, why was it necessary to have Xeris HaKos of a pasuk that permits doctors to heal patients, give them license to do so? Rabban says, because one might have been tempted to say, you know what, why do I ever want to engage in healing other people? Shema yoyma haroyfe ma'ali b'tzar hazeh. Why do I want this problem? Shema etvin imtsasi horig nefashot b'shegeg. Maybe when I'm healing him, by accident, kill him. Even if a person administers regular treatment, you never know, you know, how the patient will react. Even if you administer proper treatment and you do so to the best of your ability, you might end up causing an unintended result, and you don't want that on your conscience. You don't want that in your conscience. So, afichak nam the Torah reshus l'roif l'rapos. Therefore, the Torah gives encouragement to the doctor, license to do so. And there's somewhat included in this permission is that, you know, freedom of certain, you know, responsibility of certain consequences. And therefore, the Ramban says over here on the third line, if the doctor conducts himself appropriately, meaning according to modern and contemporary medical standards. And he does so to the best of his ability. He does so kishura, as appropriate, lufidai, based on his understanding and assessment of the situation. Ein lo behen ela mitzvah. All he has is a mitzvah, the rachmana pakdei lerefuei, because the Torah commands him to heal people. And in fact, if you have the ability to heal them and you don't, you're in violation of the pasuk of lo yisamar adam reyecha. You stand idly by while your friend's blood is being spilled. So the Torah here, in providing the doctor the license, also frees him from certain responsibilities, namely if the patient reacts badly, or let's say medical information changes, or knowledge changes and evolves, that is inevitable. Medicine will be much more advanced in 50 years from now, or in 100 years from now, than we have it today. And nonetheless, doctors are free from responsibility as long as they practice medicine as we understand the best today and in their best estimation of every situation. And that's what's included in the pasuk of Rapoy Rapay Mikanshinit and the Rishus Leroypeh. The Rapos is a certain freedom of responsibility, as long as they practice medicine accordingly and do so to the best of their ability, even if the patient reacts badly, which, by the way, some patients react badly even to standard and traditional treatments. And sometimes there are side effects, right? Even of those standard traditional treatments, the doctor is not responsible for those. However, of course, let's say the doctor makes a mistake, either in his understanding of medicine or in his application to the given situation, that would not be included under this description of the Ramban. And there, the doctor might actually be responsible for his actions. That's what I wanted to discuss a little bit today, which is the topic of medical malpractice. It rarely comes before a Beis Din. At least here in the United States, I can't speak for Israel, but at least here in the United States, these cases rarely come before a Beis Din, because even though people do sue doctors routinely, that usually they're suing the insurance company. Every doctor has a malpractice insurance. And even though two Jews have to bring their monetary disputes and litigations to a Beis Din, if one of the parties is not Jewish, of course you go to a secular court. And usually then you're suing the doctor, you end up suing the insurance company. The insurance company is a non-Jewish entity, either because it's owned by non-Jews or because it's a corporation where it doesn't have an identity at all. It's a third kind of construct, not Jewish, not Jewish, but a company, a corporation, which belongs to no one. So then you can bring the litigation in a secular court. You wouldn't necessarily have to come to Beis Din. And for that reason, a lot of times these situations do not appear before Beis Din. But we want to discuss, what is the theoretical obligation, let's say, what is the Jewish perspective of the doctor's obligation in these situations? Just to be clear, there are really three kinds of malpractice that the Gemara deals with. One kind of malpractice is found in Gemara in Sanhedrin, which has to do with dayanim. Let's say a dayan, a judge, makes a mistake in adjudicating a case. Either Torah b'Devar Mishnah, Torah b'Shiko Adas, he's missing a certain Mishnah, a certain halacha, he forgets about it. Or he makes a mistake in b'Shiko Adas, an estimation of the situation, of understanding what's going on or applying the principles. But then there's another sugya in the Gemara Bava Kama, at the end of the Masechta, about an uman shekilkel, about a craftsman who makes a mistake in performing his craft, which is kind of a form of professional malpractice. Then there's a third sugya, which has to do, and each one of these areas is somewhat distinct, and then there's a third sugya, which is the roife shekilkel, which is the doctor who makes a mistake. And there, even though the other two sugyas are found in the Gemara, this topic of a doctor who makes a mistake is primarily found in the Tosefta, which of course is those statements of the Tanaim that didn't make it into the Mishnah, were collected in a separate collection called the Tosefta. It's actually four different Toseftas, one in Makkos, two in Bava Kamma, and one in Gittin, that address the topic of a doctor who makes a mistake. It's interesting that it doesn't appear in the Gemara like the others. Anyway, but the sugya begins with the Mishnah over here, Masechtas Makkos, on Chesamid Aleph, where the Mishnah tells us, commenting on the pasuk and Sefer Shoftim, that if a person is chopping wood, Rabbi says he's chopping wood in the forest, and the blade of the axe goes flying off the handle and kills someone by accident, the person is an accidental murderer, Reteach B'Shoigeg, who has to go to Galus, into one of the Arimiklad, if the Goyal Hadam, the closest relative of the victim, finds him beforehand, or if he leaves the protection of the Arimiklad, then the Goyal Hadam can kill him. That's the parsha of the Reteach B'Shoigeg. But that's a person who's chopping wood in the forest, and the axe, the blade of the axe goes flying off the handle. However, that's because it's really fundamentally Dvar Rishus. However, the Mishnah says, Ches Mer Aleph, that if you have a person who's performing a mitzvah, such as Ha'av Hamakes Benoi, the father who is hitting his son during a time period when people discipline their children in that fashion, or Harav Haroidas Talmidoi, they were Rebbeim who used to hit the Talmidim in order to educate them properly, or Shliach Beis Din, or a officer of the court who's administering malchus, and the person succumbs and dies underneath their care, either in the process of receiving malchus, education, father, you know, training his child. So then the person is not considered to be a roitzech b'shoigeg. They do not have to go to galus. The goy hodam would not be permitted to kill them. They're completely free from any kind of responsibility. Presumption is why? Because they're performing a mitzvah. It's not a dvar rishus, it's a dvar mitzvah. So anytime you're performing a dvar mitzvah, person succumbs, you know, dies under your care, you're not considered to be a roitzech b'shoigeg. However, the Tosefta in Makos is discussing a roifei uman sharipa b'rishus beis din, a doctor who's healing people b'rishus beis din, with the license of beis din to do so, hareza goyla, and he kills the patient, he is considered to be a roitzech b'shoigeg, and he does have to go to galus. Why? What did the doctor, you know, isn't the doctor also engaged in the mitzvah of healing the patient, you know, and avoiding lo samar al dam reyecha? He's healing people. I mean, whatever the doctor fulfills in healing people, of kind of hashavas aveda. If you have to return his money, certainly you have to return his health to him. All the mitzvahs that are involved in healing people. Why isn't, since he's doing a mitzvah, even though the person died in the process, why isn't he also exempt from any kind of liability like any other individuals who are performing a mitzvah and someone dies in their care? That's a kasha that the Achronim raise, contradiction between the Mishnah and the Tosefta. So this question is raised by the Birkei Yosef's commentary on Shulchan Aruch. Because Shulchan Aruch, at the beginning of, but right before Hilchos Aveilos, you have Hilchos Reifim, so Simon Shin Lamed Vav Sif Aleph, the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Tosefta in the fourth line, Vimhemis, let's say a doctor kills a patient, Vinoida Loish Shagak, he knows that he made a mistake, so then he's considered to be b'shoigeg, and he has to go to galus. So the Birkei Yosef there, that's the Chida in his collection on Shulchan Aruch, quotes in the name of the Roikeach, earlier Rishonim, who asks a contradiction between the Tosefta and the Mishnah. The Mishnah told us anybody who's in the midst of performing a mitzvah and the person dies in their care is not considered to be a Roikeach b'shoigeg, and doesn't have to go into galus. So it seems to contradict the Mishnah, like the, you know, Ha'av HaMakas B'nai HaRav HaRei D'Stamid and the Shliach Bezin. So the Roikeach resolves that over here it's different. Because over here we're talking about a doctor who made a mistake. He didn't administer medicine according to the accepted protocols of the time to the best of his ability. If he would have, you're right, then he wouldn't be considered Roitzeach B'shoigeg. He'd be like the father disciplining his child in the normal manner of discipline, which was accepted at the time, and the Rebbe was teaching the Talmidim in the normal manner and standards and protocols of teaching children at the time. Or the person who's administering the 39 accepted Malkus, and they assessed the person before, and according to their checklist of qualifications to be able to withstand the Malkus, the person was able to withstand it. However, there are always exceptions to every rule, and the person died in their care. Was completely beyond what would have been expected, and they were practicing education and giving malchus as is routinely done. However, over here, if the doctor would do the same thing, he would also not be considered a roitzeach b'shoigeg. The doctor who's considered a roitzeach b'shoigeg is a doctor who makes a mistake. He made a mistake either in his knowledge of medicine or in his application assessment situation, and that's why he's considered to be a roitzeach b'shoigeg. And that's the accepted approach, is like the roikeach. The only time the doctor is considered to be a roitzeach b'shoigeg and has to go to galus if the patient dies in his care is when he makes a mistake. Over here, if you look at Oisu Gimel, the Aruch HaShulchan in his commentary, and that's Simon HaShulchan Aruch, two lines from the bottom, the Aruch HaShulchan says, echoing the roikeach, Kishiyesh Makam Litloi Shehu Garam Loi, when the doctor can attribute it to himself that he caused the patient to die, ayudei hisrashlus, through laziness, oishlo iyan yofe, he didn't take the time to assess the case carefully, then he's a roitzeach b'shoigeg. Avol b'loize, if he didn't make any mistake, he practiced medicine as it should, appropriately, he did so with the best of his abilities, he was alert and attentive, near alide eino chay of galus, he's not considered to be a roitzeach b'shoigeg. Demi garme av hamakas benoiva, ravis talmida depotami galus. Because it's only when he made a mistake, either due to laziness, haste, he made an error in judgment, or some kind of wrong treatment. Then he's considered to be a roitzeach b'shoigeg. Otherwise, he's protected. Along the lines of the Ramban, what the Ramban told us, Rapoi Rapei, comes to offer certain protection to the doctor, that if he practices medicine as should be, to the best of his ability, then even though it doesn't always work out for every patient the same way, he's exempt from liability. Yeah.
There are times when being a doctor is very high pressure, in the moment of the situation. So how do we gauge that?
Doctors are trained to deal with those high pressure situations. That's exactly what half the training is about.
No, so, but a lot of, it's quick thinking. So if they make a mistake, then sure, they made a mistake, but it's, again, a high-pressure situation that they have to be thinking about this on the spot. And so they gave him medicine A when they really should give him medicine B, but at the time, because of the amount of tests and how they had to get the answer, like right now, they went with medicine A. Like, they kind of, like, not guessed, but, like, they assumed that, like, 75% chance this one would work and not the other one, but really it was the other one.
So obviously, every case is going to be different, but if the doctor made a mistake, either due to an oversight, laziness, haste, error in judgment, things like that, then yes, then he's a right type of choice. If he practiced medicine properly, you know, as it is usually practiced, in general, right, we're talking general rules. Obviously, a lot of the complications of cases can, you know, things can get confusing and complex. But generally speaking, if he practiced medicine as it should be practiced, then, you know, so then he is exempt from Gawas. Moving over, though, this has to do with, let's say the patient dies in his care. What if, though, he just causes damage, but the patient did not die? So when it comes to damages, paying damages, financial responsibility, there's somewhat of, you know, obviously it isn't the same galus consequence, but there are also other principles that we have to deal with. So the Gemara says in Masechta Sanhedrin, when it comes to causing damage, other mu'al li'olam, a person is always considered to be forewarned about the fact that he could damage someone else, and therefore he's responsible for his actions, bein b'shoigeg, bein b'mezid, whether it was intentional or inadvertent, bein b'ainus, even if it was a complete accident, bein b'rason, or whether it was deliberate, a person is responsible for his actions. Other mu'al li'olam, and a person is obligated to pay, even if it's b'ainus. Tosfos in Masechta Bava Kamma asks a contradiction to this statement in Sanhedrin. Because the Gemara says in Bava Kamma there, that if a person, let's say, takes his utensils, he takes his fine china set, he takes his furniture in his house, and he runs it across Amsterdam Avenue, he puts it across the Rishus HaRabim, and someone comes with his car and smashes through it, does the person have to pay for the damage that he caused? Someone says, no, he's putter. Why is he putter? Other mu'al li'olam. He should have been more careful to go around the other guy's, you know, desk, his brake front, his chairs, his china set. He should have gone around it. Someone says he couldn't go around it. We're talking about a situation where he lined the entire width of the street with furniture, china, and crystal. Okay, so then don't go. Find a different way around. Don't drive through his stuff. Other mu'al li'olam, person's chayav even be honest. The Gemara says, no, it was ba'afelo shanu. It was in the dark. It was at night. There's no way for the person to possibly have seen this or to anticipate the fact that there might be furniture and stemware and china sets lining Amsterdam Avenue. So therefore, he's putter. As Tosfos, for a minute, other mu'al li'olam. Even though it's impossible for him to have anticipated this situation, a person is always responsible for any damage that he caused, even if it's a complete oinus. So Tosfos here articulates a distinction. Tosfos believes that even though a person is obligated to pay even when it's ba'onis, if it's an onus gomor la Rabbi Rachmana, if it's a complete onus, see, there's an accident and then there's accidents, right? There's an accident where it was avoidable, and then there's accidents where it's simply unavoidable. It's an onus gomor. You completely never could have anticipated this, and therefore you bear no responsibility at all. Even today, what people call accidents, right, are not always accidents. A guy gets into a car accident. Why did he get into a car accident? Because he's playing with his phone, he's adjusting his radio, he's thinking about this, he's thinking about that. That's an accident, but he also could have been more attentive, you know, he could have been more, you know, alert, maybe, or, you know, more focused. So sometimes it'll be shoygeg, but even if it's really an accident, right, you know, he was doing what most people would do, you could always sometimes be even on higher alert and prevent certain situations, even if they were not anticipated. But then there's some that are in his gummer, completely beyond his control, and unanticipated. And Tosfos feels that in those kinds of situations, a person is indeed putter from the damages that he causes. And he brings a riot from Yushalmi. The Yushalmi says, if a person goes to sleep, and someone comes and decides to sleep next to him after he was already going, you know, asleep, and then in the middle of his sleep, he turns over and he smacks the guy in the face and knocks out his tooth, right? So then Tosfos quotes Yushalmi that a person is putter from paying in that instance. Why is he putter from paying? Tosfos says, other mu'al li'olam, the person is always responsible for the damages that he causes. So how come he's not obligated for knocking out the guy's tooth? Tosfos says, because that's a complete onus. The guy came and slept next to me after I already went to sleep. If he had come before I'd gone to sleep, I could have put myself in a situation that I know I wouldn't have smacked him. Now that he came and I was already sleeping, it's completely beyond my control. Tosfos feels an onus. Gomer, a person is completely putter. The Ramban disagrees over here. Oishes, the Ramban's opinion is that other mu'al li'olam, a person is responsible for any damages that he caused across the board. Even if it is an oinus gomor, a person is obligated. Why is a person potter in the situation of a person who, you know, where the street, Amsterdam Avenue, was lined with furniture, china, and stemware? Because there is a contributory negligence. The other party placed their stuff in an irresponsible place. So they were negligent in placing their furniture in the Steinway and their china in the middle of Amsterdam Avenue. So there's contributory negligence that serves to exempt the driver of the car who smashed through the furniture, you know, and their items. Similarly, in the Yushalmi, a person goes to sleep, someone else comes and he sleeps next to him. That's a negligent thing to do because you never know what might happen. The other party's not aware that you're there. So since there's contributory negligence, that's what the Ramban feels that you're putter there. But Ein Achinami, the Ramban believes that a person will be obligated under all circumstances of Inus. The Rambam seems to side with Tosfos, but actually slightly for a slightly different reason. The Rambam seems to contradict himself. He writes at the beginning of Perek Vav of Hilchos Levo, Mazik Hamazik Mama Chavero Chayv L'Shalim. If a person damages someone else's property, he's obligated to pay bein b'shogeg, bein ba'oynes. The Rambam makes no distinction between an oynes that's a regular oynes and an oynes gomer. Sounds like across the board a person is obligated to pay. But then the Rambam says if a person is climbing a ladder, and the ladder is a rickety ladder, and one of the legs gives way, and he falls down and he does damage, he's obligated to pay for the damage. Because why are you climbing a rickety ladder on top of other people's property? But if he's climbing a new ladder that was made properly and is sturdy, and has been, approved and certified by the ladder association, it seems to be a very good ladder, and all of a sudden, the ladder breaks, then Hareza Potter. Shazu maka bidei shamayim. No one could have anticipated this. This is bidei shamayim. So the Rambam seems to also believe that there are certain kinds of onesim that a person is putter from paying. However, the Rambam earlier said a person is obligated to pay under all circumstances. So it could be the Rambam holds of Tosfos distinction. However, there are those that suggest differently within the Rambam. The Rambam, believes Tosfos' conclusion, but for a different reason. The Rambam believes, actually, fundamentally, vis-a-vis Hilchos Nezikin, a person is responsible for his actions completely. Even if it was unanticipated, even if it's completely beyond your control, you should have been obligated. However, there is another principle. There is a secondary halacha, which, we have to contend with, and that is the general halacha of Einis Rachmana Patre. The Torah tells us in Parashas Kiseitse, that if a woman is raped, even though she's a married woman, ulenara l'sasadover, there are no consequences for her because we don't do anything to her because it was beyond her control. From which the Gemara derives the principle, Oines Rachmana Patre, that applies throughout Torah. Kol Torah Kula, Oines Rachmana Patre. So even though vis-a-vis Hilchos Nezikin, a person is obligated for any damage that he causes, even if it was by Oines, there is another principle that modifies that, which is of Oines Rachmana Patre. So Tosfos, the Rambam believes you really are fundamentally chayiv, but it's cut off at the pass by Oines Rachmana Patre. Tosfos believes your obligation never extended in the first place to an Oines Gomer, only to an Oines that's not Gomer. What's the difference between them? The difference between them is who has the burden of proof here that this was an Oines Gomer, that this was something that was completely beyond your control. Who has the burden of proof? Normally, who has the burden of proof? The guy who wants to take my money. Usually that's the rule. Hamoitzi mechaveroi olav haraya. However, that's, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Bava Kamma, if you look over here, Oistez Vav, Bava Kamma, Kuf Yuches Med Aleph, that's only if there's no pre-existing obligation. If everyone agrees I borrowed money, and I concede I borrowed money from the bank, but I say I paid it back, the bank says you never paid it back, it's upon me to bring proof that I paid it back. Why? They're taking my money. They should have to be proof that I didn't pay it back. No, because since there's a pre-existing obligation that we all agree to, there's a cheskas chiyuv, so then it's upon me to bring proof that I paid it back and I no longer owe them money. If there is no pre-existing obligation, there is no loan that we all agree to, the bank comes to me and says, you owe us money. So then I say, go, prove it. Produce a document that I owe you money and then I'll pay you. But that only applies if there's no pre-existing obligation. If there is a pre-existing obligation and I want to be exempt, then the obligation is upon me to prove that I am exempt. So over here, there might be a difference between Tosfos and the Rambam with regards to who has the burden of proof to prove that this was an oynes that was gomer. According to Tosfos, it wouldn't be my obligation necessarily. Let's say I'm the damager, I'm the one who caused the damage, and I say it was an oynes gomer. So then it's not upon me to prove that it's an oynes gomer. You, as the person who was damaged, say it wasn't an oynes gomer, and I am obligated. You would have the obligation to prove that I owe you money, and it was not an oynes gomer because hamayte mechaveru of araya. However, according to the Rambam, my obligation vis-a-vis Nezikin extends to all oynesim. So we all agree I damaged your property. That's not under dispute. The question is, was it an Oynes Gomer or not an Oynes Gomer? So, according to the Rambam, my obligation clearly extends to all Oynesim. I am now claiming I have an exemption because of Oynes Rachmana Patre. Then it's upon me to prove, the person who caused the damage, that it was an Oynes Gomer, not upon the person who was damaged to prove that it was not an Oynes Gomer. So there might be a difference in terms of who the burden of proof lies with, and we'll get to in a second that might become very relevant in terms of litigation. Whose job is it to prove how, you know, much of an itis, how much of an accident here occurred? However, that's the general rule, right? A person is chayev for any damages that he caused, bein b'shoigeg, bein b'mezid, bein b'oinis, bein b'ratzon. So when a doctor, let's say, causes damage to a patient, right? If he practices medicine according to the physician's desk reference, he does everything that he's supposed to, and he does so with the best of his ability. Sometimes it works out for patients, sometimes not. Some people have bad reactions, sometimes not. So then, of course, he's free from any kind of liability. But let's say he makes a mistake. Let's say he makes a mistake. And he causes damage. So it should have been that he's obligated to pay. However, we have three statements in the Tosefta. Each one says something different. And the Oros HaMeach puts them all together in the Shir Klali and figures out how they all fit together. But the Tosefta says over here in Bava Kama, Perek Bava Lacha Vav, Reife Uman, Sharipa Bishus Basin. You have a Reife, who's an Uman, who's an expert, professional. Sharipa Bishus Basin, he has permission to Basin. Vehezik, he causes damage. Pater mi dina yada mechayev b'dinei shamayim. He's pater in dina yada, meaning it's not actionable in court, but he is chayev b'dinei shamayim. Does that mean he should feel guilty his whole life and you know, try and pay? I don't think so. I think, you know, b'dinei shamayim, he'll have to deal with it. I guess it's lefnim mishuras hadin to pay, but I guess it's any kind of obligation that has to do with dina shamayim. Is there really an obligation for him to pay and to try and make good on it? But either way, it's not actionable in court. It's only chayev b'dinei shamayim. Then, the other Tosefta says over here, I said, Alfred, if you mention Reaper, Bishop's Basin, Mehizik Potter, Stam Potter, Potter. Then there's another Tosefta, which says, Right, if you mention Reaper, Bishop's Basin, Mehizik, Bishoigate Potter, he's Potter, Mipnei, Tikkun Ha'olam. He's Potter because of Tikkun Ha'olam. Because of a, I don't know, it's good for society. Mipnei, Tikkun Ha'olam. So what's going on over here? One said Pater B'din Eilam, Chayiv B'din Eshamayim. One said Stam Pater. One said you're Pater because of Tikkun Ha'olam. And anyway, you should have been Chayiv. Our a priori position should have been your Chayiv. Adam Mulah Liyam, a person responsible always for damages that he causes when he makes a mistake, unless it was an Oynes Gamer completely beyond his control. So of course he should have been, you know, obligated over here. What's going on? So the Or Sameach explains that of course Adam Mulah Liyam, he should have been obligated to pay. However, if that would be the case, no one would engage in medicine. You know why? Because people have bad days. Even though we always, you know, a person, even though he's an expert doctor, he might make a mistake. Even though he tries to be alert, he drinks four cups of coffee, there might be a day when he's off his game, right? There might be times when he's not paying attention. So because of that mistake that he might make along the way, that will prevent people from being doctors because they don't want to assume that liability. So mibnei tikkun ha'olam, in order to improve the world, in order to perfect society, we wanted doctors to be available, so Chazal exempted the doctor from his requirement to pay in those kinds of situations. And that's what it means. Reife Uman Sharipa Birshus Beizdin. He has the permission of Beizdin, because Beizdin licensed him to practice medicine. And we did so with the understanding that we were going to grant him certain kinds of indemnifications that he's not obligated to pay if he makes a mistake, because otherwise no one would engage, you know, no one would become a doctor, no one would heal patients, because you never know, if they might make a mistake along the way, and they'll become financially responsible. That's why the first Tosefta said, Pater midinei adam, but v'chai b'dinei shamayim. He's pater midinei adam, but he really he should be chai, because adam will be young, he actually should have been chai, but it was a takon that's based him, if they tikkun ha'olam, to exempt him. Yes?
Just for damages or for killing him?
No, just for damages. Killing him is not actionable in court, so that wouldn't matter.
Why don't we have the person say before he goes into the surgery, say,
also I don't think that it's necessarily, you know, as inevitable as a doctor. Every doctor has good days, bad days, right? Yeah. I mean, it's like,
why don't we have the person before he goes into the surgery say I'm mochel for any damage that you may cause him, because I know what you're trying to do is just you're doing your job.
Why would a person be mochel? I'm not my home. Are you my home?
No, because he's saying, I'm going to do my best.
So Beisdin was my home for all of us. And Beisdin said, in order to encourage people to become doctors and not discourage everyone from doing so because of the financial liability he's exposing himself to, Chazal said, you're potter from paying. You're potter from paying. In society, the representatives of society did that. Instead of everyone coming into the office, right, and signing a certain waiver. So look over here. This is what it's found in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says, that's not a Torah Rishus L'Reif for the Rabbis. A mitzvah is a mitzvah to heal patients. Person saving lives. And from doing so, if a person prevents himself, meaning he holds back when he has the opportunity and the knowledge to sell, hey, save someone, I raise a shayfik lamim, he's in violation of loisamad adam reyecha, he's guilty of, you know, passive spilling of blood. Even if there are other people who could hear him, if you have unique knowledge and relationship, you might have a unique ability to connect and heal this patient. Mihu. A person should not be oisik, a person should not be engaged in healing patients unless he is an expert. There shouldn't be a doctor who's more, you know, who's more advanced or better at it than him. If he has a doctor who's better than him, who is available, then you should defer to that doctor. What does that mean? That no doctor can ever heal anybody unless he's the top in his field? So Paiskim say, no, what this means is that the best doctor who's available, right? Not all the time is the head of the department available. So sometimes other doctors are going to have to heal patients. But what it means is probably is that it's referring to unique situations. If it's routine treatments, you know, every ear infection, you don't have to kick it up to the head of the, you know, the hospital, the department of, you know, of ENTs. But if it's not something that's routine, it's something that's unique, then the doctor should consult with people who are above him, who are more knowledgeable than him, more experienced than him, in order to gain from the wisdom before healing the patient. And if they're available, let them treat the person directly. But if they're not available, then he can take that knowledge and then apply it in that situation. But it's not talking about routine things or where the head of the department, you know, is not going to be available for all of the patients. So if he's the best, you know, best person who's available, then he has to step in and to heal the patient. And if he heals without a license from Beis Din, if he makes a mistake, he's obligated to pay, even if he is an expert. But if he heals with permission of Beis Din, he makes a mistake and he causes damage, he's part of Medina Yadam and he's Chayiv Medina Shamayim. Why is he Chayiv Medina Shamayim? Adam Uali Yadam. Why is he part of Medina Yadam? Because of a takanas bezin to exempt him from paying, because if we would obligate all doctors to pay for every mistake that they make, no one would ever want to become a doctor. So mipnei tikkun ha'olam, in order to improve society, there's a social contract that we have with doctors that we exempt them somewhat from these kinds of mistakes in order to encourage people to become doctors. Where did we have this reshus bezin? What is this reshus bezin? Reshus bezin is the takana of Chazal that these doctors who are approved by bezin, you know, seem to be experts, we need them, and therefore we exempt them, we indemnify them from certain kinds of liability. If he doesn't have that kind of licensing, he wouldn't be a beneficiary of that indemnification. How do we have that Rishus Beis Din today? So the Beis Hillel over here in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch writes that that is what is represented when a person gets approval by a medical board and receives his doctorate. Then that is a license to practice medicine and the modern, contemporary manifestation of this Rishus Beis Din. It's interesting that the first time that that we have a licensing board for doctors is in the 13th century, the Renaissance, earlier actually. But this was already the Tosefta was, you know, 3rd century of the Common Era, so that's you know, much, much earlier. But this was a kind of indemnification, wasn't licensing for doctors. But in terms of licensing for doctors, which happened much later, that would serve in the place of this Takana Bezin. So therefore says the Beis Hillel, V'nir ha'mashal kasev im hubaki rotzalayim ha'miyesh lo ksav me'osa makom, if he has a certificate from that place, other experts have approved, you know, and attested the fact that he's a skilled doctor, Ashkenaz doctorate. Then if he has a doctorate, that's good enough. The Aruch HaShulchan, if you flip the page over here, Oysu Gimel, in his comments, Simon Shin Lam Vav writes, he needs certification, approval from the government, that he has permission to heal patients. And if he has that permission, then he would get that same, be the beneficiary of that same indemnification from making these kinds of mistakes. However, Rabbi Isai, the Tosefta told us that if he did, look back at Oysu Rawa, if the Tosefta and Baba Kama told us that's true, Harofa Yimen Sharipa Bishus Bezim Hizik Potter, but Chavo Yoysim and Aroi, if he did more than was appropriate or acceptable, Hareza Chayim. Then he is chayv, even b'dina yadam, sounds like. So even though the Tosefta was clearly aware of this takanas based in, and after that same Tosefta said that he's potter, even though adamu liyadam, here he's potter because the takanas based in, if he does more than is, you know, acceptable, so then he would be chayv. And the way that Tashbetz understood this, and other later achrayim, is that there is one, you know, generic, understandable kind of negligence, you know, human error, and then there's gross negligence. There's negligence which is simply unexcusable, under any circumstance. I'm not in a hospital to know, but let's say they operate on the wrong, you switch operations. You know, they operate on one person, one operation, another guy, another operation. You know, there's certain things that are simply unforgivable, right? You know, they're supposed to do this operation, they give that operation. Supposed to give, you know, this medication, they give a different medication. So there are certain kinds of gross negligence, and everything would depend on the situation, certain kinds of gross negligence that are simply unexcusable, and the doctor would be obligated to pay despite his licensing, and despite the Rishus Beis, which indemnified him from certain responsibilities, here he would be obligated to pay. How do you assess the difference between negligence and gross negligence? So I think the answer is, as we find over here in the Tashbates, that it depends on how doctors would treat this situation. The Tashbates writes over here, if Hikiro to Uso, Rofim Acherim Umnim, Chayv Hu Bein B'Shoyeg Bein B'Meizid, Min hadin kedin chayvo. Meaning, if the doctors all agree, you have a panel of doctors who are experts in the field, they understand the human error that goes into practicing medicine and the challenges that are involved, and they also understand, you know, what's considered to be beyond the pale and simply inexcusable. So if they determine that this, after convening such a panel, this mistake is gross negligence, so then the doctor would be obligated to pay despite the Rishus Beis Din, you know, that was applied. Who has the burden of proof, though, to determine whether this was gross negligence or not, you know, gross negligence? So over here, it sounds like the benefit of the doubt might be given to the doctor. Why? Because the Gemara says over here, Maseches Bava Kamma, again, this is slightly a different topic, which is the topic of professional malpractice, but there, the Gemara says, Hanoisin behemo v'tavach, if a person gives an animal to a sheichet, v'nivla, he turns it into an avela, he shechs improperly, who's obligated to pay for the animal? So if he's an uman, if he's licensed, meaning if he's, you know, this is an expert, potter, he's potter. It happens sometimes. Everybody makes mistakes. Hedyot chayv. If he's a novice, then he is chayv. V'amar Rav Rachanu uvda hava kamei Rabbi Yochanan bekenishta d'moin, in the shoe of moin, someone presented an animal. V'amar, you know that this situation. So he told them, I'm away zil icy raya the mamchis l'tani golem v'patrich. Bring a raya that you have a certification to shech chickens, and I will exempt you. Meaning, if you bring a raya that you're an uman, I'll exempt you. Why does he have to bring a raya that he's an uman? And who exempt him? That was the kasher of Bochan and Wasserman, asked over there in the Kavish Yom. Why does he have to bring a raya that I'm an uman? Let him bring a raya that I'm not an uman. The answer is, no, you have to bring a raya that you're an uman, because we all understand you are the one who caused the damage here. You caused the damage. So that's agreed upon. There's certainly an existing obligation. You want to say you're putter because you're an uman, you're an expert, and there's certain indemnifications that come along with being an uman. Certain, you know, freedom of responsibility, because the mistakes happen when a person does this professionally. So we understand, in order to have sheikhtim, we're going to have to exempt them when they turn something into nevela by accident. So so there are exemptions, but you're asking for an exemption from an existing obligation that should have existed because you are a mazik. So therefore, you're the one who has to bring proof that you have this kind of certification. But once you do bring proof that you have that certification, then you are, you know, someone wants to say that was gross negligence, that's not covered by your certification, that would be upon them to bring proof that that was gross negligence. We'd revert back to the old principle of hamaitzi mechaveroi olav haraya. So if there is a benefit of the doubt here, we'd probably give the benefit of the doubt to the doctor. But if it's clear that there was gross negligence here, then the doctor would be obligated to pay, even though he is licensed. And even though we do need people to have, we do need doctors, and we're willing to underwrite certain mistakes, that's only if it's not gross negligence, if it's regular negligence. The Chasam Sofer, regular mistakes, you know. The Chasam Sofer, but it's a very fine line. Doctors will know the difference, but you know it's hard for the layman necessarily to split these kinds of hairs. The Chasam Sofer is a fascinating case of here is the design of a woman who had someone who helped her in her home, and the woman passed out. What was the treatment for someone who passed out in those days? You gave them schnapps. That was the best that they had. So you gave scotch, brandy. So the woman passed out. She reached for the scotch table, you know, to the brandy, and she was going to give it to her. Instead, she took the kerosene, because they had gas lamps. So she took the kerosene and she fed her the kerosene, and the woman died, tragically. Violin. So they came to Chasam Sofer, what kapara, is required in this kind of a situation, if at all? So Chasam Sofer says the woman doesn't require any kind of kapara. The woman doesn't require any kind of kapara. Why not? Seems to have been malpractice. Why doesn't she require any kind of kapara at all? Why not? So there are those that wanted to explain it based on a controversial comment of the Tashbetz. The Tashbetz over here, Oisid Dawud, says that the only time a doctor is obligated in situations of malpractice is if he's a surgeon. Look back at the Tosefta. Tosefta said, Roife Uman Sharipa. He's a craftsman. What kind of doctor could be described as a craftsman? A surgeon. He works with his hands. An internist who gives medications and perhaps performs, you know, procedures, but not in the surgical, you wouldn't call an Uman. You wouldn't call an Uman, right? So the Tashbetz claims a doctor who just dispenses medications, even if he administers the medication himself, is not obligated in situations of malpractice. He says, look over here, three lines from the bottom. A guy who just hands out pills and potions, Eino nikra roife uman or roife stam ve'eino bechlal zeh. He's not included in this. She'eino bo idei chavo is chai ben ezikin. It's not included. The Birkei Yosef quotes this comment of the Tashbetz, and he says the Shulchan Aruch left it out deliberately because it's difficult to accept. Well, you can cause a lot of harm by dispensing the wrong medication. This woman fed her kerosene and she died. So the Tashbetz, the Birkei Yosef, look back at Oisei, the Birkei Yosef quotes the Tashbetz, and he says the Shulchan Aruch left it out. Sasmu Devrayim. On purpose, because we don't accept the Tashbetz. Not only do we not accept the Tashbetz, Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, the Gebrach, the son-in-law of Shlomo Zalman, passed away a few years ago, wrote in a journal called Chumen, even if the doctor prescribes the wrong medication, or advises the wrong procedure, you know, by mistake, is liable for the damages that ensue. Even if he just prescribes it. He didn't give, you know, he didn't administer it to the person himself. He just prescribed it. Or prescribed a certain procedure, he is obligated for the damages that it caused, because that's called garmi. He's the proximate cause, meaning he's causing the patient to do this, and therefore he's responsible for the damages that are caused. Others disagreed with this comment, with this psak of Zalman Nechemia. Rabbi Bleich Shlita, in his one of his books, Contemporary Halachic Problems, disagrees with Zalman Nechemia, and he says what? He says the doctor is not. He definitely had a role in the damages that were caused over here, right? He made a mistake in prescribing this medication or this procedure, but he is an indirect cause. He's a remote cause. He's not a proximate cause. You can't attribute the damages directly to him. It's a grumma. The Gemara says in Maseches Bava Kamma, let's say a person places poison in front of someone else's animal. I don't like my neighbor's dog. I'm not a big pet guy. I don't like the dog. So I would never, I'm not suggesting this. The guy places poison, near the other guy's dog. The dog eats from the poison, loyaleno, and the dog dies. So, wrong, not nice. But is he a grumma? You know, is he mazik? So Gemara says, no, he's grumma ben ezikin. I feed it to the dog. The dog came and ate it himself. It's wrong, chai b'dei shamayim, but not chai b'dei nayalim. It's grumma ben ezikin, your potter. Garmi is much more direct. What's a situation of garmi? Garmi, the Gemara's classical situation of garmi, where you are chayev, is a little bit more direct. What is that? Let's say a guy comes from a storekeeper, comes to the bank, and he presents him bills that he got in his store. So yes, are they all real bills or some counterfeit? The bank can verify them. So the bank looks at them and they say, no, they're all fine, they're all good. Fine, he goes, leaves, he takes payment for the item, right? He says, oh, you gave me all good bills? Fine, thank you. Then he goes to the store to spend the money. They say, what are you talking about? You're passing off counterfeit bills. So he goes back to the bank. He says, you told me, you verified that the bill was good. It turns out that it's counterfeit. So Gemara says, in that situation, the bank is obligated to pay him. Because it's true, they didn't inflict the damage themselves. They didn't pass the counterfeit bill, but they did verify that it wasn't counterfeit. So they had, you know, they caused him damage in a very, you know, an approximate way. And therefore, they're obligated to pay for those damages. But that's immediate. They verified the bill, and in fact, it was counterfeit. Here, the damage doesn't happen until sometime later. So that's why there are those that argue the Zalman Nechemia. They say simply prescribing the medication doesn't expose the doctor to liability. Maybe if the doctor handed the medication, the doctor administered the medication himself, that might be, you know, then perhaps it'd be a greater liability. But simply prescribing a medication, prescribing a procedure. Lots of times, by the way, people go to get second opinions. You suggest a procedure, and they'll go get a second opinion. So to really call it a direct cause, you know, cause and effect, and for Chiyuv Nezikin is maybe a little bit difficult. So that's in my focus of contemporary Poiskim. But getting back to the Chasam Sofer, why did the Chasam Sofer feel that this woman was exempt? She gave her kerosene instead of schnapps. What's going on? So it seems that the Chasam Sofer is telling us something else. If you look at the Chasam Sofer, he says clearly at the end of the third line, Ach ein la hamis aleha harbe. Don't give her too hard of a time. Kevin Shah asked about Solos Nefoshois, Vigam Hayabohu Yoiser. She was under tremendous stress. She didn't know what to do. The woman passed out. There was no one else available. Before the times when you could call Hatzalah to come, you know, it was upon her to save her life. She had no other options. She did the best that she could. She knew, don't stand idly by where your friend's life is in danger. So she did what she thought was an acceptable therapy. It's true, because of the stress of the situation, she grabbed the wrong thing. But says the Sam Sefer, if you're going to be mocking her, no one's going to ever want to save anybody, ever. Because why would I get involved? I'm just going to expose myself to liability. No one's going to save anybody. So this is what's known as Good Samaritan protections. Good Samaritan is not a Jewish concept. It comes from the New Testament. However, the concept of, you know, is being echoed here by the Sam Sefer. And that is that we want people to, if there's nobody else available, if there's somebody else available, pass it off to someone who's more knowledgeable and experienced. You know, and perhaps licensed to do so. But if not, if you do know how to do it, so then, you know, there isn't someone else available. You should do the best that you can. You know, you might be obligated to do so because of L'samar Adam Reyecha. In order to protect you, we exempted people from liability in those situations. Now, it's also because the range of mistakes that an inexperienced, untrained person would make of what's considered to be an understandable mistake is much greater, right? If a person grabs the wrong thing when they're inexperienced, it's much more understandable. When a doctor who functions in a hospital all day reaches for one medication instead of the other, then we have much less tolerance for that. But over here, when a person, you know, is panicking and is in a dining room where a person happened to pass out, the leeway we're going to have for them, you know, is going to be that much greater. And in order to encourage people to engage in saving people, we want to, you know, we have that kind of same understanding that he should be exempt from liability. Anyway, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help us all. As we said earlier, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who really administers refuahs. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help us all. Heal all the patients. There shouldn't be any malpractice. And all of Klal Yisrael should be zeichet to refuah shleimah. Yeah.